The reserves in question lay 50 to 150 feet underneath the sands of the McMurray Formation, near the Athabasca River in northern Alberta Province, in western Canada. Lakes, streams, and boreal forests of stubby trees had covered the sands for centuries. By 2007, as new technology made it easier to separate the oil from its earthen mix at a reasonable cost, Oil and Gas Journal estimated that Alberta held 175 billion barrels in total oil reserves, which amounted to the third largest national oil reserve in the world, after Saudi Arabia and Venezuela. ExxonMobil's Canadian affiliate, Imperial Oil, had been producing oil from the Alberta sands since 1978 through a joint venture called Syncrude. The operations required open-pit mining to dig out the oily sand with mechanical shovels 50 feet high. Hot water or caustic soda then washed the sand to separate out the bitumen. Upgraders similar to those ExxonMobil had installed in the Orinoco Basin of Venezuela refined the remainder into a synthetic blend that imitated the refinery-friendly characteristics of light, sweet crude. The final product was highly desirable in world oil markets, but the manufacturing process was environmentally destructive, expensive, and energy-intensive. It also required immense water use. Syncrude stripped forests, dug out peat and dirt, and then attacked the sands below with its giant shovels. Environmental investigators documented toxic pollution runoff from the mining operations. Moreover, the industrial processes required to extract and manufacture oil from bitumen required burning more carbon-based fuels than would be burned to drill a normal oil well. As climate change gradually emerged as a global threat, environmental groups also campaigned against the Alberta operations because of the extra polluting energy that was needed to dig out and refine the bitumen. Oil from Alberta, barrel for barrel, contributed among the highest greenhouse gas emissions of any source of oil in the world. Carbon sequestration technology might eventually allow Alberta's producers to capture greenhouse gases around the giant shovels and the upgraders and inject those gases into underground storage caverns, but that technology remained immature, unproven, and expensive. "Climate leaders don't buy tar sands," read a banner draped across an Ottawa bridge when President Obama's motorcade rolled into the Canadian capital. Over lunch with Stephen Harper, the pro-business prime minister, the Canadian cabinet team that worked on climate and energy was wary. The Bush administration had expressed no concerns at all about the pollution caused by companies operating in the oil sands. To the contrary, senior officials, such as Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman, traveled regularly to Ottawa to convey the message in effect, as a Canadian official involved put it, "Produce as much of this oil as you can. We'll buy all of it." Obama's position seemed unclear. Prime Minister Harper's advisors prepared for Obama a giant map of North America depicting, with drawings of bubbles of various sizes, the greatest industrial sources of greenhouse gas emissions on the continent. The map's biggest bubbles showed that American coal-fired electric power plants were the greatest climate change offenders. By comparison, the oil sands were relatively minor contributors to global warming, the map showed. Of course, the map avoided emphasizing that the sands were, in fact, Canada's greatest source of greenhouse gas emissions by far, and would be for the foreseeable future. "What do you think? Is it dirty oil?" a Canadian Broadcasting Corporation interviewer asked Obama. "What we know is that oil sands creates a big carbon footprint," Obama answered. "So the dilemma that Canada faces, the United States faces, and China and the entire world faces, is how do we obtain the energy that we need to grow our economies in a way that is not rapidly accelerating climate change?" Obama had been among those American senators who had previously endorsed laws to limit oil imports from Canada derived from the Alberta sands on environmental grounds. The 2007 Energy Independence and Security Act contained a provision, known as Section 526, that restricted U.S. federal agencies from procuring transportation fuel derived from any oil source with an unusually heavy carbon footprint. Section 526 was almost comically complicated because it defined the banned fuel sources through reference to statistical greenhouse gas emission averages that had never before been calculated for such a reason. Around the same time that Section 526 was enacted, California lawmakers also adopted a low-carbon fuel standard for gasoline or other fuels used in that state. Lawsuits ensued. It remained unclear, for example, whether under the North American Free Trade Agreement, California or the federal government had the legal right to limit Canadian oil exports in this way. ExxonMobil had a big stake in the Alberta sands, but so did BP, among other oil multinationals. In a world of rising resource nationalism, Canada's oil, however dirty, offered the largest single reservoir in a free market economy that could be easily acquired and owned by American or British corporations and their shareholders. They would not yield its potential casually. The Washington lobbyists of the major companies banded together after Obama's return from Ottawa. Through the American Petroleum Institute, they launched a public relations and lobbying campaign to support expanded production from the Alberta sands. In Houston, the oil companies formed a front organization, the Consumer Energy Alliance, to fight against any proposed restrictions on Canadian oil. The campaigners appealed above all to American nationalism. By keeping out Canadian oil, lawmakers would only ensure that Alberta's oil was sold to China or Japan, leaving the United States even more dependent on unreliable suppliers from the Middle East and Venezuela. An ad taken out by the Consumer Energy Alliance in the Weekly Standard showed Caucasian schoolgirls at play, presumably Canadians. Energy security? The answer just might be closer than you think. ExxonMobil put its corporate shoulder into the lobbying campaign. David P. Bailey, an in-house specialist on the subject, joined a task force at the Council on Foreign Relations that was organized early in 2009 to produce a definitive study on the issue. The study group's advisory committee included, besides Bailey, a Chevron representative, business consultants, academics, and centrist-minded environmentalists. The final report, The Canadian Oil Sands, Energy Security versus Climate Change, was rigorous and thorough. It recommended addressing the greenhouse gas emissions problem posed by the Alberta sands through linked cap-and-trade systems in the United States and Canada. The report also expressed skepticism about Section 526 and similar fuel restrictions aimed at Canadian oil. Tread carefully with any low-carbon fuel standard, it recommended. Resist the misuse of other U.S. environmental regulations to constrain oil sands. Apart from its endorsement of cap-and-trade, the Council report generally sided with ExxonMobil's positions.